this was my identity.
Nobody talks about how freaking hard it is to be a dentist. What most people talk about is how this affects the patient. What nobody talks about is how this affects us. Dentistry is ready for this. Now is really the time.
Welcome to Wellness in Dentistry. I'm Dr. Martin Mendelson, one of your co-hosts. I'm a disabled dentist, coach, speaker, and thought leader, and I'm joined by my good friend and co-host, Dr. Kyle Stanley, who's a dentist, tech entrepreneur, speaker, and researcher. And together, we've helped thousands of dental professionals pursue wellness in dentistry, both here and in our two-day in-person workshop called Lightside Live, which is coming up in Southern California this coming November 1st and 2nd. So go to wellnessanddentistry.com and you'll find a link to our live course. Now, today we're going to talk about a potentially controversial topic. We're going to be talking about dental employee equity, the good, the bad, and the ugly. So welcome, Kyle, to you.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm excited to talk about this topic. This is a topic that I have had experience in, of course, founding a tech company and understanding the value of stock equity, stock options, these types of things. But it's never really discussed in the dental world.
No.
You know, usually it is, I mean, we'll generalize, it's a single practitioner, owns 100% of the business, employees are employees.
Yep.
And that's kind of the exchange, right?
Yeah.
But we were talking before we recorded, you have family that has been in their whole life in corporate America.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people in big corporations. One of the big negotiating factors of why people take certain jobs is stock options.
Absolutely.
Vested equity over time.
Absolutely.
I mean, you have people that will take less salary for more stock.
Yeah.
You have people that will stay in businesses for decades because of their stock.
Absolutely. 100%.
And this whole idea for me really comes from the fact that we now know from some of the research from the ADA that's been published, about 10 to 15% of the dental staff has left the profession since the pandemic.
Yep.
So you and I hear a lot of our colleagues saying, I can't find a hygienist. I'm booked out 6 months of hygiene. I can't find another one. Or if I do, they want $100 an hour. I can't find auxiliaries. I can't find dental assistants that'll stay with me. They're getting other offers. They're moving to other cities. I can't find front office team members. And I thought about this because seeing from the tech world, what I have learned being in the tech world for 7+ years is that people live and die by their stock.
Oh yeah, 100%. And you could argue, you know, dental clinicians live and die by the equity that they built in their practice. I mean, it's a similar idea. And, you know, I think it also goes that we need to say also that there's many different ways to skin a cat. And so we're not sitting here saying that, you know, from day one that somebody comes into your practice, they have equity. There's ways to do this, vestment schedules, you know, you got to be there a certain number of years. I mean, there's a whole bunch of different ways to do that. We're here to talk about kind of the philosophies therein. And you're right. I mean, as you were talking about my own personal experience, my entire family has been in corporate America and aerospace and technology, and that's a big part of compensation. And so think about it this way too, particularly we were also talking before we recorded about just certain feelings of certain clinicians around this whole idea. And it's not like an employee in a large corporation has like 50% ownership, like far
right
from it. It's like tens of percentages in the grand scheme of things. So, you know, we want to talk about how this can maybe change the dynamic of retention, culture, positivity, and optimism in the office.
Well, one example that I'll give that many people have probably heard of, but there was a graffiti artist named David Cho. And early in Facebook's rise to fame, they asked him to paint a mural. It was going to be 60 grand.
Yep.
He chose to take that 60 grand and put it into stock in the company.
Yep.
It's now worth $200 million.
Yeah.
Now, let's bring us all back to life, back to earth. There's no dental single practices that are going to be worth billions of dollars, okay?
Yeah.
But when you think about how invested that artist became in Facebook, he's evangelizing Facebook. You know, he does this one thing, he's still going to be sending people, he's still going to be referring people over to do business with them. Let's say that can be happening with your team. Because I've been an auxiliary before, I've been an oral surgery assistant. I think you were an assistant as well, right? Aren't?
100%.
Both of us have seen both sides. I know when I was an oral surgery assistant, I worked with all women, so I say the girls. The girls loved to feel underappreciated and talk about how much money the doctor was making and how little money they were making. Oh, you know, he's so rich and we're just struggling here. But many of them didn't really know the numbers.
And that's something we were talking about before we hit record, and one of the things I'm most excited to dive into, because look, our teams are intelligent people, and if the only visibility they have, and this is my own personal bias, if the only visibility they have is the production day sheet, everybody has a calculator on their phone. They can really quickly figure out what production is, and without visibility to some of the other nuances of, well, forget about nuances, realities of running a business, it would be very easy for an uninitiated individual to be like, you're making, over $1 million a year. No. We have 60 to 75% overhead, or 55 to 70% overhead. We have loan payments. We have, so there's a lot of arguments that could be made for practice transparency to create a culture of understanding, so that, for example, we don't put out too much composite on the pad that then cures and we have to throw it away and that all adds up, or too much bonding agent, or being flippant with disposables, et cetera. When people have an understanding of the impact, it doesn't matter the industry, it changes their perception and their behaviors, right?
Yeah, that's a great point. You know, if the dental team has some ownership or even a feeling of ownership, they treat it like it's theirs, right? And I love those examples that you gave, because every dentist knows, oh my gosh, one drop, only one drop of the bonding agent. That stuff is like liquid gold, right?
Literally.
So that kind of stuff changes. And also when it's brought back to the team. So for example, hey team, if we keep our production at a million, they're at a million, we keep it at a million. However, we bring our overhead down by 5%. I'm willing to give this percentage back to you guys in salary or in bonuses or in a trip or in something like this. And then that becomes something that everybody's working together. And that is probably one of the biggest problems that I see in dental practices. When you see the staff and the ownership, they don't have this feeling of working for the greater good. It's everyone's working for themselves on both
And
sides.
I would agree with that, and it's a bit of perspective, because one could play devil's advocate, I guess you could say, on both sides of the coin, where it's like, look, if you don't have the visibility and the transparency to relatively even what the real numbers are, how do you expect that individual to take that responsibility seriously if they don't understand what the parameters are? I mean, on the face of it, if we can all just take a quick step back, on the face of it, that makes a lot of sense. Right. But it's something we do. And let's say something else too. This is not a criticism. This is just a reality. There are many different practices where you have the doctor and some of the certain members of the team that have a higher level of education, higher level of yearly income, higher level of, or different level, more broad life experience versus some of the other team. That's not a negative. It's just a reality. So this could theoretically be an attempt to kind of level the playing field from a knowledge perspective, to get people to understand why it's important not to, put 10 drops of bonding agent out in the dapping dish.
Yeah, and I'd like to give an example for people that maybe are unfamiliar with stock. Okay, so like in the tech world, the general vesting period is 4 years. So you'll get a certain amount of shares, and this depends on, of course, if you're higher level, if you're C-suite, if you're newer, if you're a manager, if you're a VP. But this X amount of stock will get vested over generally 4 years. So you're incentivizing people to stay. Now, you may be saying, well, after 4 years, they could leave me. Yeah, but think of how much the business could grow in 4 years.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. It's true. And there's so many different ways to do it, just because because I've seen in my own experiences, there are certain gates, like if you leave, you know,
yeah, you can
one
have
year
cliffs.
In. Yeah. And so there's all different kinds of ways to do this.
And you could customize this. I mean, this is your business. You could say you have to be here for a decade. I mean, you can do whatever you want. But 100%. What I've seen in the tech world, and I've seen this in corporate world too, with some of my friends that are in the corporate world, is people will stay.
Yeah.
They will go the extra mile.
Yeah.
They will refer patients, bring people in, because they feel like it's part of their business. And every dentist that's listening to this has had one of these employees that doesn't have stock, maybe, that has this ownership feeling, and they are incredible.
Yeah.
They are people that are cleaning just because they want it to look nice for the patients, not because you're going to find them and be mad at them, right?
Exactly.
And those employees are amazing. And if you can keep those employees, it becomes something that can really be an asset to your business.
Absolutely.
And grow your value.
And so here's what I also want to say. We didn't talk about this earlier, but I think it's a good thing to chat about, which is, because if we play devil's advocate, it's like, well, theoretically, wouldn't you have like a person sitting there in your practice that, you know, has the equity that feels like they're safe, et cetera. Again, there's other ways to handle that, because when we talk about even yearly bonuses and bonus compensation structures, I'm a huge believer, and I learned this during my years at Spear, because we had this as employees ourselves and then taught it to the clients of Practice Solutions, which is bonus compensation structures are not solely based on practice numbers or business numbers in the case of a company. They're weighted heavily for that, sure, because you can't pay out the money if you don't have it. But there's also an element which can be structured objectively on behavior and how you are to work with, and how tardy you or how punctual you are. I'll flip that. How punctual you are, how you interact with others. Do you play nice in the sandbox? There are ways to make sure that we are following or creating positive culture by how not only we interact, not only how we structure potential equity, but also how we deal with it on a regular basis in quarterly and annual bonusing.
I like what you're talking about with bonuses, because this has been a bane of my existence. And a bane of many doctors' existence. People that are in our Lightside Club have talked about this before too, is this feeling of a bonus being required.
Yeah.
Or a bonus being, I guess not required is the word I'm looking for, but expected.
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Well, and there's something that not a lot of people talk about that MTS Manji taught me, which I think is incredibly important, which is this. You cannot continue to give people raises on their base salaries and end up being so out of whack with the market. That's what bonus compensation's for. Right? So if the going rate for this team member in the practice in your area is X, and the next thing you know, you're with somebody, you know, for 10 years, and now it's X times 5, you're in trouble, because that, you know, A, you know, you're out of whack for the general public. B, then how do you bring somebody else in at a significantly lower clip, even though they're new and the other person's old? There's so many nuances to this. And so in some ways you could argue that the equity thing might also help to mitigate that kind of thing as well.
What are your thoughts on being open about the numbers with your team without overwhelming them? Because many of our team members, they may not have business experience, honestly, like many dentists. But when you're talking about this is our production, this is our collections, this is our overhead, this is our salaries that are left over, then how do you also be open without, I mean, of course, you're not going to tell what each other's salaries are. Now, as you and I know, they talk. So
And
tell me some of your thoughts about that.
so my personal bias is don't assume, and this is going to sound really guttural, don't assume your people are stupid. And so I very much respect those that want to maintain their personal financial privacy, but that's not what we're necessarily talking about. Anybody in your practice can look to see what you're producing on any given day. So my bias and my potentially controversial comments are these. If you're not sharing the other side of the coin, all you're sharing with them are inflated, erroneous numbers that aren't real because it's just production. It has nothing to do with collection. We both have seen doctors that have accounts receivable that are so out of whack, it'll make your toes curl. And so if we can just take a step back and be honest with ourselves, that anybody who's truly interested is going to be able to figure it out in about 10 minutes, why would we not be either completely or relatively transparent with the other side to get them to understand the risks and the realities of running a business so that the assumptions aren't based and the subsequent judgments are not based on these inflated production-only numbers?
It's a great example. I mean, you bring up a good point. When I was an oral surgery assistant, we would do this. We would say, okay, he did four sets of wisdom teeth. That's 2,500 each. So he's doing 10K a day. We work 5 days a week. So five times or 10,000 times 20 days a month times, let's just say 11 months out of the year. Wait, he's making $2.2 million? But when you think about it, it's probably 30% of that. Now, you know, oral surgeons make good money, right? It's not like they shouldn't, but they're not making $2.2 million generally. So.
And I can tell you in all candor, I'm thinking back now, with the docs that I've coached that have had challenges with their teams around this idea, it's always those that are less than transparent. I mean, I've coached doctors that are reticent to share a daily financial goal for a myriad of reasons, and then therefore have a scheduling template that's blocked based on procedure so that they can achieve said dollar production goal. But by the same token, once again, with all due respect, listeners, don't think your people are stupid. If they want to figure it out, they can figure it out. And so my personal bias, I sound like a broken record, is transparency builds trust. Because if you're not, the only thing you're sharing with them is the inflated upside. That's
And it's so true. I never really thought about that. But
it.
now thinking back on my experience as being a dental assistant, being an oral surgery assistant, and I mean, if we knew at the time that the overhead was oral surgery, I'm guessing is probably 60%. They have a little less overhead because they do it a lot of dental alveolar, so no lab bills. It's similar to endo, right? A little lower overhead. But if we knew that, I mean, yeah, the doctor's still making good money, but he or she is an oral surgeon that went to school for 12 years, 16 years, you know?
Well, it's funny too because I've observed this. People talk about fellow speakers. I've observed this even in my days at Spear. Like I remember, doctor clients coming up as like, oh, you all are making hand over fist. I see, these many people, blah, 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 blah. And it's like, do you have any idea how much it costs per meal per head for all of you? Like it's like full hot service, full service catering with multiple team members. Like that alone And back in the day before we went to electronic manuals, like the seminar manuals were like phone books. How much do you think it costs to print those?
Printing.
So, I mean, it's just kind of funny because when I think about that, it's like, oh, the dentists were actually doing what they're complaining their team members are doing.
Wow, you're so right. And you would think, come on, you know what overhead is. You know how this works. Now it differs in every profession, every sector, but you know how this is. One thing you brought up was loans too. I think this is an interesting topic because most team members, maybe not most, some team members may assume that on day one, the doctor paid for all that and he or she has no loans. Right. And when you look at it, hey, they took out $1 million loan to buy this practice from the previous practitioner. Then they maybe took out another 300,000 to revamp it. So there's a $1.3 million loan payment that's happening every month. And they get paid last.
And I think this brings up a good point about degrees of transparency, right? I don't think either you or me are saying that we should tell them how much the loan is. But by the same token, we can talk about percentages of overhead. We can talk about, there's all different ways to skin a cat. But without sharing any of it, again, all they see is the inflated upside. That's it.
Yeah, and I think when you talk to your team in these numbers that make sense, it will allow them to earn their own bonuses. So I remember there was an incident in my practice where we had team members that came to us and said, "When are we getting our holiday bonus?" Because previously that was just kind of required, and that year wasn't a great year. And I remember being so angry, thinking that, what do you mean? You think you just deserve it because you did your job like I did my job? Like, it's a bonus, it's extra. And I think if you're open about that, you say, if we hit these numbers or when we do this, then there's this percentage. I think it's going back to boundaries, going back to expectations and communicating them.
So if I'm hearing your story correctly, you all hadn't been communicative about how the pra and then so then you get to Christmas time and people are like, what are you, Bob Cratchit? Like,
Yes.
where's my bonus?
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If you were in your team member's shoes, you got a bonus every year, you heard nothing good, bad, or indifferent, what would you expect?
Totally true. Totally true. And I think my def I was so defensive because I took it as entitlement. And I hadn't at the time looked back on how we were communicating or lack thereof. And said, "Well, what should I expect?" And I
And it
know
was
that this has been a big trigger for many of the
sure.
people that have taken my courses, is this feeling of entitlement from the team without looking introspectively and saying, "What could I have done better to stop this conversation or to change the narrative?"
You took the words out of my mouth, which is, I'll say it differently. It was entitlement, but who created that?
Yes.
Right?
And some of that may come from this feeling of not feeling like they're part of the business. Because I know a lot of dentists will say, "Oh, my staff comes in and they leave after a year." It's like it's just a job for them. It's just another job. Now, if they had vested stock, if they had vested equity that was going to be only available if they were there for 4 years, or a portion of it gets released after this certain amount of time. You can customize it to whatever you want.
Absolutely.
They may be more inclined to stay and say, "Oh, well, if I stay an extra year, I will have more vested equity that I could buy stock options." And then you don't lose those team members. And you may be thinking, well, what if they stay and then they leave? But if they stay, you're not spending, there's some research on this too, and I don't know if I told you about this, Martin,
Yeah, you mentioned it the other day. It's pretty
that
wild.
it was something like you spend over 200% of their salary when you lose an employee. Let's say you have a dental assistant and they're paid $50,000 a year. I'll just make it easy. And they leave. And you say, well, we were 2 months without a dental assistant. We did have to post on Indeed. We had to pay for that. We had team members that were taking time to make calls with candidates and meet with people and interview. And when you add that up, you may think it costs us 10K, let's say, but you're not thinking about opportunity costs as well. Think about the patients that you couldn't take because you only had one assistant instead of two, or that new assistant was learning, and so you weren't as efficient with your surgeries or with your restorative procedures. But the research shows it's over 200% that you spend finding the new candidate.
And I think in today's reality, there's so many different news stories of large corporations that posted profits that also then therefore had big layoffs. And so in most of those cases, they're public companies, of course. That's why everybody knows the profits. However, that being said, I mean, again, there's so many different ways you can skin a cat. We have to hit these growth goals in order to achieve these, bonus compensation elements and, these levels of investment and so forth. But it, those news stories and those realities in today's marketplace actually can fuel healthier conversations around, this is a practice where we do care about the people that allow us to thrive. Therefore, when we thrive, all of us benefit. It's like your expectations. These are the boundaries. These are the guardrails around growth expectations that then therefore lead to bonus compensation, equity, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But again, without that, all we communicate is the inflated upside. That's it.
I'm so glad you said that, and that it's being reminded to me so much, because it's so true. I think many dentists may even think the opposite, but it's like if you're not being open, you're not showing them that there are negatives, there are debits that happen, right? It's not just deposits that's happening every time a patient swipes that card. And this whole conceptual idea that we've brought up today, I think really goes back to treating your practice like a real business. So we're saying maybe treat stock and equity like a quote unquote real business, like a publicly traded business or like a venture-backed business. But I think so much of it is just thinking of your practice as a business. I think a lot of us dentists, because we are artists and we are clinicians and we are scientists, the business is just kind of there. We're there to do good work and we put out fires that need to be done so that we can do the dentistry. And that was how I was. I was never interested in business really until I had to be.
And I would say this too, because I've heard so many clinicians say this. I've even said this in my career. If I do great dentistry and I do the right thing, the money will follow, which is 100% true. But it leaves out the other side of the coin. It leaves out the business management element of it. And so, yes, that's a true statement, but the management of the money coming in, the management of debts, the management of personnel, the management of inventory control, all that stuff also then leads into the ultimate, bottom right number
Well, I
at
may
the
even take that expression and add a line to it.
end.
So, if you're doing good dentistry, if you're being ethical, if you're focusing on quality, the money will come, but your mental health may suffer.
True, 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 true.
That is what I would say. Because when I was going through burnout, I was making good money and we were doing good dentistry. And part of the reason was my partner was very good at business, but I was not. And he was better at communication than I was. He was better at having those conversations than I was. So there was a dichotomy of how he spoke to employees and how I did, and one wasn't right or wrong, but there
Right.
was a difference. And so there were challenges because of that.
Yeah.
And so I think that, yes, you can focus on doing the quality, but as you and I know, so much of the challenges that come to practicing clinical dentists is with their team.
Oh, 100%.
So if you're doing good work, if you're having good communication with your patients, you're not going to have the mental health challenges, the wellness challenges with your patients. But guess where it's going to come from then? It's going to come from your team.
100%. And I want to reiterate for particularly the practice owners that are listening that are butting all over the place. You know, but this, but that. Because I hear similar in light of team training and spending money on team professional development. Well, what if they leave? Well, since when is a dental practice a unique thing? It's not. And so when it comes to this kind of discussion around equity and bonus compensation, find experts, find the accountants, find the financial planners, the resources to help you set this up in a proper fashion and a proper way. This is not rocket science. It's been done before. It's been done by large and small entities. And so I think we need to kind of check our egos at the door and take a step back and be like, we are actually not unique. We're just simply a small business. And other businesses have figured out how to do this. So we need to engage with the appropriate finance and accounting people and HR to understand how to structure this because it's been done before.
I'm so glad you brought that up because I forgot to bring up this story at the beginning of this episode, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to talk about this was there's a Facebook group that I'm a part of, and they were talking about a specific DSO model. And this specific DSO I'm fairly knowledgeable about because I know people that are part of this DSO. And their specific model is they're like a DPO, okay, Dental Partnership Organization. So general DSOs own the entire business and everyone else is an employee. DPOs have owners of the practice. They're usually minorities, you know, less than 50%, sometimes 40%, 30%, et cetera. And the question or the discussion that was happening in this Facebook group was, what if you own 40% and then you retire? Who's going to want to buy only 40% of a dental office? And I was like, I mean, isn't this what happens in every law firm?
Yep.
Isn't this what happens in literally every publicly traded business on the stock market? Like, if you have Apple stock, you don't own 100% of Apple. You own like a 0.00000001%. And you're happy with that.
Yeah.
And so that, you know, nothing against this person who commented this, but that person probably is just living in the dental sphere where everybody owns 100% of their practice. And that's how it has to be. And you have to be more open to that because I'm sure there's a ton of new grads that would love to come in and say, well, yeah, it'd be nice to only take out a $300,000 loan to buy 40% of this practice, then take out, you know, whatever the math would be, $1 million to buy the rest of this practice.
And there's, oh my gosh, that opens up a whole can of worms, which we won't get into, but there's other ways to skin that cat too, because, you know, you don't necessarily have to take out that $300,000 loan. That could be based on production. And you could basically buy your way in through your sweat equity. There's lots of practices that do it that way as well, where, you know, in some cases it's, we'll just use the same number, 300,000. So you take out a $150,000 loan and the rest of it is actually coming from sweat equity. Again, I'm not an expert in this, but these are the things that I've seen, observed, and observed work both within dentistry and outside of dentistry too. Let's not reinvent the wheel. Find the right people, find the right advisors, let them guide and help you.
Yeah. And I think the law world is a great example.
Yeah.
We have a lot of law firms that are, one that just comes to my head is Jacoby and Meyer. I don't know. There were always commercials for that or something, right?
Yeah.
So you have multiple people that own these firms. And every once in a while, someone leaves and another person comes in and they may buy in at 10%. And then over the year, they buy 5% more, they buy 10% more. Maybe they're 50% owner at some point. And so I think that we can't just be dogmatic about every practice should be a single operator that owns 100% of it.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to stay in the realm of what dentistry has been for the last 50 years, maybe keep doing
Sure.
that. But if you want to grow, if you want to change, if you want to be more modern with the times, and especially the challenges that are happening now,
right,
which, as we mentioned, are staffing challenges, then you may want to think about looking into different opportunities with stocks, options, vesting periods.
All kinds of things, all kinds of things, you know? And what I would also say is don't rush the process. Find those people that can be on your board of governors, your advisors, make sure you're comfortable with them. Ask around, talk to your attorney friends or colleagues or even relatives and do your due diligence and do your research. It doesn't have to be done tomorrow. Rome wasn't built in a day. And so I believe our intention is to get people to think that there are other alternatives and other options out there, and it doesn't have to be the dogmatic 100% ownership.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Think in a different way. Think in a way that may bring more of this doing things for the greater good idea into your practice. And then think about how that could really change your practice and change, you know, selfishly on this podcast, we talk about your wellness.
Yeah.
Think about how if you were making more money, you would have more time, you could take more time off, you would have less problems with your team, you have better communication, they have your back on things. I mean, this could really change how you enjoy your profession.
Yeah, 100%. Absolutely. No.
I think this is good. I think this is a good topic. What's any last thoughts on this?
I think my biggest last thought is just keep an open mind, number one. Do your research, do your due diligence, be open to options. And remember, if we are being completely opaque versus transparent, we are only sharing the inflated upside, i.e. production, with our team members. And even if you tell me that we don't talk about that on a regular basis, they can do the math. It's there. And so let's not kid ourselves. Let's just be open to possibilities. And you know what? If at the end of this investigatory period, it's not for you, that's okay too, right?
Yeah. I mean, they can go to the practice management and say, run report and click the dates, right?
Right.
It takes five clicks nowadays.
Yeah. Well,
much easier to do in the digital world.
There are some guardrails, like yes and no. Like you can restrict.
You can make
some
it
of
specific for which user can.
You can make restrictions, but again, they can look at the data. They can look. They can figure it out. Like
they know how much a crown is in your practice, and you did five of them today. So
I think an example is, you know, we've had a couple different people in the Lightside group who've been more transparent with their hygiene departments, and their hygienists were completely unaware that they were running at a loss, completely unaware. And they were looking to do certain clinical initiatives to help patients better understand what's possible to increase case acceptance. And the minute they started to be transparent, things started to turn around. Isn't that interesting? And so we can't assume that our teams truly understand the totality of the profit and loss, if you will, that is the reality of a dental practice business.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah.
So think about this, explore this topic. Like Martin said, don't reinvent the wheel. Talk to your friends that are involved with tech companies, with law firms, with publicly traded companies. Ask them how they vest stock, what kind of percentages they get, how many shares do they get, how is it earned over time with bonuses and performance. And this may be something new to bring into the dental world. I know that some of the larger conglomerates are doing this. Some of the DSOs, some of the DPOs are doing this, and they have very, very smart business people behind them, which is why they grow so fast, make so much money, right? So think about your business as a business.
Yep.
I know you're a scientist. I know you're an artist, but you have to run a business as well. So if you guys haven't written us a written review, we would love to get that on iTunes. That really helps us out. I mean, we have some 5-star reviews now, and thank you for those that have done that. That's very much appreciated. And if you haven't signed up for Lightside Live, go to wellnessanddentistry.com, go to our links, click on Lightside Live, and come hang out with us in California for 2 days. I'll say it again. We are so fun. We are so fun to be around.
We are.
You guys are going to have so much fun with us. So sign up. We'll see you there, and we'll see you on the next episode of Wellness and Dentistry.
Bye-bye.